Many forces can drive a male college student to commit sexual assault, but one of the most important may be the company he keeps. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This hour, we'll talk about preventing sexual assault through mentorship. We'll hear from college students here in Iowa at Grinnell and ISU who are mentors in a program called Mentors in Violence Prevention. We'll also hear from a teacher at Sioux City West, where the program is making a real difference to address violence there. And the director of the Mentors in Violence Prevention Leadership Institute at UNI will join us. Changing the culture that leads to sexual assault. First, this news. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. One in five women is sexually assaulted in college. Most often it's by someone she knows, and also most often she does not report what happened. Many survivors are left feeling isolated, ashamed, or to blame. And although it happens less often, men, too, are victims of these crimes. That's the problem, as stated in the first report from a White House task force to protect students from sexual assault from earlier this year. Last year, addressing critics who said that universities systematically underreported violent crime, Congress passed the Campus Sexual Violence Elimination Act. This requires that domestic violence, dating violence, sexual assault, stalking also, these cases be disclosed in campus crime statistics. Congress is now considering further legislation to address the problem. Now, many forces can drive a male college student to commit sexual assault, but one of the most important, it seems, may be the company he keeps. This hour, we want to talk about preventing sexual assault through mentorship. Listeners, what are your thoughts? One in five women is sexually assaulted in college. Are you one in five? Share your thoughts, questions, concerns about the approaches we discuss this hour to stem sexual assault. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. RiverToRiver@iowapublicradio.org. Our email. Tweet us at IPR Talk or find Iowa Public Radio on Facebook to leave your comment or question. My first guest is with us for the entire hour. Alan Heisterkamp is director of the Mentors in Violence Prevention Leadership Institute at the Center for Violence Prevention at the University of Northern Iowa. He's in our Cedar Falls studio. Alan Heisterkamp, welcome to our program.
Good morning, or good afternoon.
Yeah, we're just into the afternoon hours.
We are.
Thank you for coming in. Tell us, before we meet a couple of young people who have taken part and actually have become mentors in MVP, the Mentors in Violence Prevention, give us the basics. What is it? What is the approach being taken here?
Sure. Well, thank you very much for the opportunity to participate in this important discussion on the topic that's on the minds of a lot of parents and also, you know, college students. Here as the fall sessions begin, the Mentors in Violence Prevention model, if you will, is really offers schools, high schools, college campuses, a framework bend for student leaders, individuals who, you know, see behaviors that are abusive and hurtful and harmful as being what they are. They're wrong, and in some cases, they could be described as being criminal. It really infuses in those young leaders some skills and the opportunity and a platform, if you will, to have some conversations and discussions explicitly around some of the social norms that might be out there supporting, you know, violent behavior or abusive behavior, or at least not having it go unchecked. And so, in essence, the MVP model really engages a near-peer approach, older peers talking with younger peers, 2 or 3 years of age, maybe younger than they, around a really dynamic discussion around their responsibility as a friend, a teammate, a positive, you know, pro-social person that's, you know, attending that respective high school, college campus, or living in that community.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that clearly comes through in this approach is the role of bystanders, that we want to be aware of what silence communicates here, don't we, Alan?
Absolutely. You know, silence in the face of abusive behavior or derogatory comment or a homophobic comment, for example, that silence is oftentimes interpreted as condoning the behavior, even though those of us who, you know, are bystanders who would hear it or observe it or see it, we may not like it. We may think that it's wrong. But if we speak out or respond in a way in which to correct that behavior, oftentimes the abuse or the inappropriate comments can come back on me because the culture of that system, school, community, university, doesn't support you know, those pro-social behaviors. So there's some hesitancy on the part of bystanders from saying or doing something.
Alan Heisterkamp with us of the University of Northern Iowa as we talk about sexual assault prevention through mentorship. Also joining us now in our AIM studio, Tucker Carroll. He's a student at Iowa State University, a former MVP program mentor. Tucker Carroll, welcome to our program.
Hey, thank you so much. And actually, it's great to hear from Dr. Heisterkamp again. I know I learned a lot and really got started with the MVP program back at West High, where he really started this whole program off and kicked it off.
This is in Sioux City.
Yes, sir.
All right, we'll talk about that. Christina Weber is with us, also junior at Grinnell College, originally from Indianola, also a mentor in the MVP program. Christina, welcome to you.
Hi there. Thanks so much for having me.
Let's talk with you two, Tucker and Christina, about this. Tucker, let's talk with you because this is primarily, the predators, primarily males in this case. Describe what goes on, your first contact with MVP, and why it gained your interest.
My first contact, I guess, with MVP was as a freshman going into West High in Sioux City. And really it started, you know, it was probably the second or third year, so it was still a pretty new pilot program, and they were really starting to get their base built, moving in with the students that were the juniors and seniors, you know, that you kind of watched growing up through middle school, elementary schools. And just that first week of school right off the bat in our homerooms, spent a lot of time there. So they kind of break you off in groups of guys that you already know and you're comfortable with. And we had our first MVP training session, as they call them.
What happened in that? What happened that opened your eyes?
It definitely starts off slower to get you kind of comfortable with the group. And I think from there it stems out into these, you know, in-depth discussions. And as those relationships form, it's really unique when you get a room full of guys mm-hmm. or girls, from what I hear. Either way, just how the discussion changes and how much more in-depth you get and the comfort level changes a lot faster. So to utilize that time that you're in school.
Give me something concrete here, Tucker, some ideas, some things that you talked about, the insights that this program gave you.
I would definitely say the largest insight is it hurts more to stay silent. I know one of the biggest things that we consistently talked about and that I really took from this whole program was sitting around and just listening to things happen, being that bystander. Really, it almost hurts you more and affects you more because you hang on to that, you remember that, as well as letting, you know, whoever's committing some kind of an action or a harmful act mm-hmm. know that that's okay or think that that is okay.
Mm-hmm. You are closer to high school than I am, certainly, and Alan Heisterkamp, but we all remember from high school that, you know, the school will have a program and people buy into it or not or think it's hokey or not. Were there those who didn't buy into this?
You definitely have those students that don't buy in, and you'll go through the motions for, you know, 4 years. But then I think on the reverse side of that, it also makes a difference when you have a student population that does buy in, and especially if you start with those key members, you know, those juniors and seniors leading different sports teams, leading different academic teams or competitions that really, you know, everyone looks up to them. So I think getting those individuals, those key individuals to buy in has the largest impact.
Okay, so what is an example you can give us of a situation that perhaps you were trained for and actually found happened later in your life where you had to step in and used what you learned in the training?
You know, I actually have a few from college that went both ways. I'll start off with kind of my hesitation story that really made all of this real to me. My freshman year, probably my second week of school, I was in the back of a pickup truck coming home from an intramural game. So there's probably about eight guys in the back of a pickup truck. We're just driving across campus, and you see a girl running. And somebody, you know, we're from all different parts of the United States in the back of this truck, so it's really a different, unique backgrounds there. And somebody, you know, yells out at this girl, "Hey," or "Look at that slut." And, you know, you hear that going by and you freeze, you know, our eye froze. And I think that was when it really became real to me, like, this actually happens. You know, you don't just read about these scenarios. So that's when it really became real to me, and I actually actively, you know, I still remember that moment, like I said, because it lives with you as long as I didn't say anything. So that really has made me an advocate to act a lot more moving forward.
What would have been a good action in that case, in that pickup truck?
You know, to just say something right then and there. As soon as he said something, you know, or made his remark or comment, just say, hey, that's not all right. Or, you know, it's just to make my stance on the whole subject or topic just open right from the front and just, you know, maybe change how our relationship is, but to really shape maybe his perception of that's not all right here.
Mm-hmm. And an example of when you did act?
Actually, I was at a going away party this summer for one of my friends who was getting deployed, and we were sitting in a bar in Ames, Iowa, actually, and he had his whole family was visiting, and then there was also, you know, a lot of our close friend group and just some students that he really has known, you know, we're sending him off. But in those, you know, social settings, there's also other people there. So his cousin had a slightly too much to drink, and I'd only met her recently that evening. And I'm sitting, you know, meeting new people just along while everyone's kind of, you know, seeing their friend go away. So she was kind of cornered by a jukebox with some guys that were playing pool with her, and she kind of started to talk to, but just really started to look uncomfortable and really, you know, not move a whole lot, or moving around a whole lot, shifty, really not wanting to look like she wanted to be around those guys as they were, you know, slightly getting closer to her and being, you know, it was all around just not a major scenario, but just to see that her there, my training really did kick in there, you know, to grab one of her friends, grab the kid that I was talking to and just walk over, make it a very nonchalant deal, make it a smaller situation and just grab her, you know, hey, would you like to go back to the group? Or, hey, why don't we pick a song and go see your cousin who's getting sent away? So that really made that situation into a very played down ordeal that hopefully had a large impact.
And without that training, you would not have recognized that body language, that situation, and known how to intervene?
I would say it definitely helped me recognize it sooner, before it became a large deal, or we had, you know, that way there's no fights, there's nobody that's trying to, you know, be a bigger man or deny anything. It wasn't a large deal. So I think my MVP training, hearing it from both males and females has really helped me recognize those sooner and be able to react a lot faster. I mean, when you've played through a scenario 3, 4, 8 times, it's not new to you anymore. It's something that you've practiced.
Christina Weber, you're a junior at Grinnell College. You were a mentor in the MVP program there. I understand you took training last year as a sophomore. Why did you get into this?
Our wellness director reached out to us. I spent a lot of time with her working through active bystanderism, and I had already spent time with her going to the Apple Conference, which is an NCAA student-athlete wellness conference. After going through that, I became interested in the active bystanderism part, and she approached me with this opportunity to become more invested in it.
Mm-hmm. As a bystander, did you realize the powerful influence you can have?
Yeah, absolutely. I know that with, like, Grinnell's self-governance tents, we have a lot of responsibility to each other and to our, like, to everyone on our campus, and having this sort of training has helped out a lot with that.
So what is it like? Help us understand what it's like before you have this training compared to afterwards. Is it like you have some radar now to see social situations differently?
Right. Like before, there's like always some sort of intuition, like when a situation becomes risky. But going through this training makes it easier to pick up on those before they become more severe. And like that happens, like not with just sexual assault type of situations, but also like alcohol, tobacco, and other drugs and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Does it also, Christina, build up sort of a network because you can look around the room and see male friends or others that are of you've discussed these things with, and they are of a like mind here.
Yes, absolutely. Like I feel a lot more empowered to talk to others who've gone through similar training or like at least know how to do active bystanderism. We teach that a lot at Grinnell, whether it's like through the full MVP program or just the active bystander part. So like knowing that there are other people there that can help support me in taking those actions helps a lot.
As Tucker relayed, is there also an instance from your life, your experience at Grinnell College that you can relay to us?
Yeah, absolutely. Mine is not sexually assaulted. It has to do with harm reduction as a whole. I had a friend this past year who was out with her friends, and I was getting weird text messages from her. So I went, I my radar went off a little bit because she didn't usually sound like that. So I went and found her and had to intervene with her friends because she'd reached like a level of intoxication that was dangerous. Despite, I had to like use some direct methods that I learned in MVP training to get her out of that situation into a safe place. In the end, I had to end up taking her to the hospital. We had to go through a process to do that. But going through MVP training helped empower me to like make those decisions despite it being an uncomfortable situation.
Mm-hmm. Does it change also when you go out on an evening to have a good time, whether it be downtown or wherever you go? Mm-hmm. Does it spark a conversation beforehand about what are expectations among your group of friends?
Yeah, absolutely. Going through this training has helped me. Like my friend group or my teammates and I will talk before we go out and like set expectations for the night. That way we hold each other accountable and we know that it's okay to intervene if the situation gets out of hand. Recently, we've gone through student staff training and over 90% of people actually want help despite like not showing it. So like knowing that I have the power to do that helps.
Mm-hmm. Ellen Heisterkamp, what are you hearing from these two young people? They've obviously been very touched by the training that they have and are putting it into action, and from what we can tell, in a very good way. Can you tell us what are the norms that are now being discussed, perhaps not discussed, that can be problematic in the social norms that this program addresses?
Well, sure. One of the things that strikes me is that these two students are so much further ahead than I was when I was their age.
Sure.
As a student at high school or here at the University of Northern Iowa as an undergraduate a long time ago. But a couple of things I heard recently shared by the speakers. Number one is going back to one of Tucker's comments about intervening, is that I don't know that if the general community, the general population, really appreciates the pressure for men to be silent and to not call other men's behavior, you know, out on the carpet.
What is that? What's behind that pressure to stay silent?
Well, there's a lot of privilege and there's a lot of entitlement wrapped up into being male, you know, with regards to relationships and being in control and you know, being strong and not taking no for an answer. I mean, these are all messages that we get as young men, as boys growing up. If you, as a young man, are involved in sports or other competitive activities, you're kind of instilled in you the notion that you don't take no for an answer, you know, that you don't just walk away at the first sign of defeat. So there's right. this sense of persistence and this overarching attitude of entitlement, if you will, of men and in relationships with girls. I also think too, which is a whole nother topic, Ben, is this the objectification and advertising of women's bodies and how that all kind of feeds into the notion of you know, how women and girls are treated in our culture. But going back to your point, your question, the permission that men need to have from other men. And when we do that, when guys like Tucker, who are 17 and 18, get in front of a group of young high school students who are boys, who are 14, and talk about, you know, how it would bother him if he's a friend of his or a colleague or a classmate was being hurt, that nobody would intervene or do something, that would be really frustrating and hurtful to him as a high school student. And younger boys would say, well, yeah, I would want that to happen to my friend or my brother or my sister either. So you got that conversation started. But then to play off that, number two, the idea about what does it mean to be an active bystander? What does it mean to intervene? And so often is the case where even as adults, we feel like our options are to do nothing because it's none of my business. Or if I do intervene, I may compromise my own safety, right? I mean, I might find myself in a bad situation. So what the program like MVP and others, quite frankly, that are out there, really is to try to really role play and demonstrate different ways to intervene. It could be a direct intervention. It could be something where you get an ally or friend, like the example that Tucker gave when he solicited, individuals who are familiar with the young girl in the bar to go over and nonchalantly and very indirectly kind of change the subject, you know, shift the tone or the focus of the conversation. And there were no words exchanged. There were no, potential aggressive behavior. It was done very strategic on Tucker's part. And giving young kids early on options to think about the different ways in which they could intervene directly, indirectly, create a distraction, get an ally or friend. I mean, there are numerous, and we're only limited by our creativity when we think about how to intervene. And so what we were able to show over the last, you know, close to 12, 13 years now is that individuals who go through the MVP program, the model, and work through some of the scenarios, at the end of the day, students are less likely to do nothing. They see other opportunities and other methods to intervene in a safe and appropriate way.
Tucker Carroll, you started off with this program in high school, as you mentioned, in Sioux City. In the second half of our program, we'll be talking with a biology teacher there, Kent Martin, who is a mentor coordinating this. Tell me why you think it's necessary to start earlier in high school to change attitudes and have these conversations and not wait till college.
I'm a really firm believer that it's the relationships and the accountability that you start that early on that really gets students thinking. I mean, it's all in the habits that you form, and I think high school is a very shapeable and molding time for most students, and I think that's when you really begin your social habits, that you start choosing the people you hang out with, and it all stems and grows from there. I know that just as an individual, I know that's where I really, I think, kind of found who I was, and you really start forming those morals. So that's why I think it's just teaching to form those relationships early on and how to bring up those discussions early, because if you can do that in high school, it's so much easier in college.
Christina Weber, did it surprise you in this training? You were privy to conversation, thoughts of young men when they're together. Did aspects of that surprise you, the predatory, perhaps, nature of that?
Yeah, we had certain discussions that were co-ed and others that were separate. After having the separate talks, we would come back together. So a lot of men find that they have like stereotype reinforcement, where like, they feel the need to be strong or to be aggressive and things like that. We had to like go through like stereotypical words that described us, and a lot of the ones that they were given that were negative, like had like negative female connotations to it. And so like if they didn't act manly, like they were they would be given like these negative names and everything. So having like that type of situation like brought back to you is surprising. Like that being said, like we recently had a survey where like 90% of women like experienced unwanted sexual advances, which didn't surprise me at all, but 70% of men did within our student athletes. Like that number was also really high.
Mm-hmm. Let me have you address this, Alan Heisterkamp, before we have to go to break. Very quickly, a tweet here to us. Why is the discussion are always about female victims and never seem to acknowledge male victims? Quickly, Alan Heisterkamp, I guess it's predominantly females who are the victims, right?
Well, in sexual assault and in sexual violence, the majority of the victims are women and girls. In Iowa, of all the victims, 75% would identify as a woman, a female. Mm-hmm. We also know, too, Ben, that young boys and girls are perpetrated in terms of victimized in sexual violence when they're at a young age. And young boys, ages 10, 11, are also targets for sexual victimization, primarily in 85% of the time by a male perpetrator.
Okay, we thank you for that tweet, because we do want to not exclude this as we emphasize sexual assault prevention through mentorship. And we want to thank Tucker Carroll and Christina Weber. I think you have to get off to class, if I'm not mistaken. Tucker Carroll in Ames, thank you for sharing, as well as Christina Weber in Grinnell. Thank you both. Alan Heisterkamp, you'll stay with us as we continue our discussion about the culture and prevention of sexual assault through mentorship, the Mentors in Violence Prevention model. It's a program that matches upperclassmen with lowerclassmen to change some attitudes that can lead to sexual assault. Back in just a few minutes. Back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer, talking about the culture of sexual assault, violence, and the prevention of a sexual assault this hour with Alan Heisterkamp, director of the Mentors in Violence Prevention Leadership Institute at the Center for Violence Prevention at the University of Northern Iowa. Also talking about the role that mentorship can play in changing attitudes, nipping it in the bud, so to speak, by having conversations. Older upperclassmen talking with younger classmen about relationships, drinking, sexual assault, and rape in the hopes that silence will not be the rule for the future, but to help these conversations get started and perhaps change attitudes. We'd like to have you join our conversation as we look at the statistic that 1 in 5 women is sexually assaulted in college. Are you 1 in 5? What are your thoughts, your questions, comments? about the approaches being discussed this hour to stem sexual assault. 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Alan Heisterkamp with us in our Cedar Falls studio. We want to also talk with Kent Martin. He's a freshman mentor and coordinator and biology teacher at Sioux City West. We talked with a former student at Sioux City West earlier in the hour. Kent Martin, welcome.
Thank you.
You've been teaching for about 30 years in high school, for about 10 years, I understand.
That is correct. I started year 29 last week.
All right. Congratulations.
As you
approach
you.
Three decades, you're also, I understand, a graduate of Iowa State University.
Go Cyclones.
There you go. Let's talk about the types of violence that you were seeing and wanting to address at Sioux City West before having this program.
I was hired in Sioux City in 2004. I returned to Iowa from 14 years teaching spree in Southern California, and I was hired and under new administration the year after I was hired, we decided to kind of change the way the ship was steering, and
what sparked that change? What was
administrative,
happening?
New administrative leadership, and just I think the vision from the principals coming in, and obviously Al Heisterkamp, who's on the phone or with you, I guess, had led the program here in our building. We had heard about a program in suburbs of Chicago, and we were actually able to take about 20 adults and some students to visit this high school, and we basically emulated the program that they were utilizing there.
Mm-hmm. Give us some
Mentors in Violence Prevention added on.
Give us some examples of behaviors in classrooms, in hallways, that you were seeking to eliminate or head off.
Sure. Just, overall disrespect, kind of tough attitudes. We had a huge problem in this school, and I think district-wide with physical altercations, fist fighting and hair pulling and bullying and, anything that you would think could possibly go wrong in a high school, we saw it. Our attendance was horrible. The ship needed, like I said, needed to be steered in a new direction, and we implemented these these programs, and we have seen nothing but just incredible growth and strengths within our building and our student bodies.
Can you quantify for us how much of a reduction in unwanted sort of violent behaviors you've had?
Within a matter of 2 years, we dropped our physical violence rate almost 80%. Our attendance improved just unbelievably. We empowered the students to talk with each other and, kind of set standards for themselves, as well as, the grown-ups in the building. You have some manipulation, to get the students to take on empowerment and establish ownership and, in a good school. And we talked with the media around Sioux City. We talked with other students and the faculty, and we said, this is not what we want to represent. We want something new. And within a matter of a year or two, things have really, really taken shape.
How can you chalk that up to this MVP program?
Well, we have a homeroom situation every day, with the exception of Monday, where students meet in homerooms. In different districts, they call them different things. A TA or, basically it's a homeroom, 25 kids. They are assigned five to six mentors, male and female students. We implement the MVP piece every Wednesday with a new topic of discussion, and it is a nitty-gritty, real conversation. There's a grown-up, there is a supervisor within the room, but the supervisor pretty much stays out of the conversation. It is completely student-driven, with the curriculum that we use or a current event topic that we bring up. And it is a true-to-life conversation that these kids have with each other.
Is that the appeal of it, that it's true-to-life, that it's not hokey, something that came down
exactly.
from up above, but it's the students' own concerns?
Exactly. And they're hearing it from a peer versus a 50-year-old standing on the other side of a podium, you know.
Why does that make a difference?
I think just the utmost respect the kids have for each other versus, you know, a parental figure or an authoritative figure, they hear it better. They hear it from a peer, I feel.
Mm. Kent Martin, stay with us, Kent Martin. I want Jennifer Jacobson to join us as well by phone. She's wellness director at Grinnell College. So here we jump up to college level. Jennifer Jacobson, welcome to our program.
Thank you for having me. And I have to put in a plug for the Iowa Hawkeyes just to counterbalance it. That's where I did my graduate work.
All right. Jennifer Jacobson, this Grinnell College implemented this MVP program in 2012. What were some of the signs you were seeing that you wanted to go this route and see some improvement?
The signs we saw were an opportunity for proactive behavior. We know on a college campus, between 3% and 5% of the men are the ones committing 90% of the sexual assault. So our motivation was, how do we engage the other 95 to 97% of the men who want to have a positive impact on our campus culture? And how do we engage our women in something other than just talking to them about their individual risk reduction? How do we empower our students in general to have the kind of environment they really want to have here, of a culture of sexual respect? Because we know that lasting, sustainable change is going to come from our students. As an administrator here, I can write any policy I want, but it's really the lived experience of our students and how our upperclassmen model and communicate these values to our underclassmen that makes a difference.
Mm-hmm. So how did you launch the program in 2012, and how did that work?
So we started with, I had a peer who was in our student affairs program who was starting a Real Men program, again, promoting a healthy identity for masculinity and helping men prevent gender-based violence. And he and some students had actually gone to see to do a training with Alan Heisterkamp. We are so lucky in the state of Iowa to have Alan Heisterkamp right in our backyard. Sometimes we take him for granted and we forget that he's a national leader on this stage. But we're so lucky to have him right here at University of Northern Iowa. So they had went and seen him present and came back and said, wow, that was really valuable. And in the next year, we earned an NCAA Choices Grant, which is a grant that's meant to help student athletes have a positive impact on the campus environment in terms around alcohol. We know that alcohol and issues of sexual assault are so closely tied. So that was a positive way for us to get the conversation going on both those things. And we started with our student athletes, not because we have any evidence that they have different drinking behaviors or that they're more likely to be responsible for sexual assault, but because they're some of our campus leaders and some of the ones who are easiest to empower and bring together in a peer group to have the power to affect positive change.
Mm-hmm. Let me have you react to a tweet that just came in from one of our listeners, Chris. Chris says, pride in school sports breeds an atmosphere of competition that easily morphs into devaluation of human life, especially women. React to that, because I understand what you're saying, that you, mm-hmm. why you started off with the athletes, but we can't ignore our headlines when we look not at Grinnell necessarily, but other colleges and universities, that athletes do get in the headlines for sexual assault, and that's been a problem that's plagued not only our schools, but across the nation.
Right, and we do know one of the reasons why athletes are identified, it's because it's a primary identity. Never on our campus do we hear what a physics major did or what a theater actor did. So we want to be careful about that. But certainly there's power in addressing the culture of the locker room or what men talk about when they're together. And a lot of men have never had the opportunity to have a proactive conversation, to examine their own beliefs that they might have just absorbed from the culture around them and not had a chance to talk about. And the great thing I enjoy about presenting and working with male athletic teams is it gives us that opportunity to sit together and talk about what values and expectations are. And Munn really welcomed the chance to talk about it proactively. It's not a very engaging conversation for most men to tell them, don't be a rapist. It's a much more engaging conversation to say, hey, let's look at and challenge some of the values that we might have, and let's talk about how we can have a positive impact on our campus community.
On Facebook, Colin is writing, sexual assault and rape are terrible crimes that have to be stopped, but at the same time, calling men rapists is every bit as ugly and offensive as calling women sluts, writes Colin here. Alan Heisterhamp, perhaps you can come in at this point to take us into the minds of men who commit sexual assault. And we say it's a minority of men who do this, but they don't see themselves as rapists, do they?
No, they don't. Just like in some cases, women don't see themselves as victims of abuse. And we look at abuse on a continuum in our trainings, looking at verbal abuse, emotional abuse, physical and sexual abuse, and understanding what those behaviors are. So to your point about men being perpetrators of sexual violence, not seeing themselves, you know, in that light, because so much of this stuff, Ben, has been normalized, right, in terms of how I interact. So groping, grabbing, pinching, teasing, getting in the space of another person, the scenario that Tucker described in the first half hour of the show, where, you know, he sensed the concern and the uncomfortableness of the young woman in the bar just based on the stature and kind of presence, close proximity that the two men were displaying to her. And so picking up on those and understanding what those behaviors look like and sound like and having a conversation and how in contrast would they be to those of respect? You know, what is verbal respect? What is sexual respect? And how do we emphasize those positive attributes? We oftentimes focus on or see some of the negative behaviors as being somewhat normalized, which is, again, part of the whole awareness part of the training.
I wonder if you have this exercise, Alan, or in this MVP program, if we had the example of what was discussed among a group of men in a pickup truck about a woman crossing the road earlier in the hour. Do you ever say to men, what if your comment was heard by a group of women, you know, would it be different? I mean, you're saying this to a group of men. Would you be willing to say it to a group of your female friends?
Well, I think in the example that Tucker gave with the truck bed full of young college-age men, and the young man reaches out or yells out and calls the woman a slut or a whore or whatever the comment was, is the silence that the other men immediately, you know, grab onto or demonstrate. I think in terms of having that comment said in front of a female group, I think quite frankly, Ben, women would probably speak out much quicker.
I guess no. What I was meaning to say, I wasn't very good in bringing it across, was to have men imagine that their what they thought was a closed conversation was let out, and if they would make the same comment if they imagined that others were hearing it as well.
Yeah. That's a good question. I mean, I think every situation and scenarios are different depending on the social dynamics. You know, are we friends? Are we strangers? Do I know them, each other? You know, what's my relationship to the person on the receiving end of the comment, or what's my relationship to the person who's actually, you know, demonstrating the abusive or degrading language? I think all those are factors, and all those need to be discussed and theorized or hypothesized in terms of how do I respond to that, and what do I say in response to those comments.
Jennifer Jacobson, it sounded like you wanted to jump in there.
No, go ahead. Okay. I defer to Alan there.
Okay, let's take Jim in Spencer. Has been waiting. He dialed 1-866-780-9100. What's on your mind did you hear this conversation, Jim in Spencer?
Yeah, hi. Well, I'm very concerned about these issues. I think, you know, we need to be ever vigilant in the way we raise our sons and daughters and, you know, other people's, you know, aspects to safety and respect. I think, you know, some of the numbers would suggest that things are a lot worse than they might actually be. I see on the FBI crime site that forcible rape in 93 was at 41.1 per 100,000. And in 2012, it had dropped to 26.9. I think this would suggest that the 1 in 5 number is exaggerated. I think our daughters are safer than we might think. Our sons are probably more likely to be physically assaulted than our daughters are to be raped. But nonetheless, I think that the fact that 90% of men never will, never have raped is something we deserve to acknowledge.
Mm-hmm. And we mentioned that from the outset, I think, though. But let's get a reaction from Alan to your comments. Are we seeing improvement? Are we exaggerating the problem, Alan Heisterkamp?
No, we are seeing improvement. And I appreciate the caller recognizing that, particularly in the world of domestic violence. Ben, across the country, the last 10 years, statistics would yield a drop in 50% in reported incidences of domestic violence, which we know in terms of domestic violence, that's defined as intimate partners, right? Couples married or cohabitating together. And so that intimate partner violence is really gone down by and large to some of the programming, the social media campaigns about men being those men, the 90% of the men who believe that these behaviors are wrong, but really don't have a platform or haven't really spoken out against it. And so we've seen, I know in Sioux City, we ran a campaign in our community with billboards, signage that the general population could see on a daily basis. We supported it with advertisements in the newspaper and sports programs. Just, again, those messages about this stuff's wrong, and we believe it's wrong, but now what can we say and do about it? So, no, I concur. There's been some positive trends with regards to victimization. We're not there yet. We have a long ways to go, mm-hmm. But we are making some positive trends.
That 1 in 5 statistic also from that report of the White House task force that was released in April of this year, I believe. Yeah, Jim, thank you for your call from Spencer. We're closing in on the last 5 minutes of the program. Kent Martin, who has been mentoring students as a biology teacher at Sioux City West, you're joining us. I wonder, a couple of other questions occur to me. How have parents been reacting to this? Are they okay with these conversations?
You know, that's interesting. We've had very little, we haven't had a lot of negative comments coming back from parents, because I think parents are appreciative with the talks that we're having. I think about, you know, back to my days back in the 70s and 80s growing up. I grew up in Marcus, Iowa. We would never have imagined talking about the subject matter that we talk about. And, you know, I'm not saying it's a parental thing or, you know, a teacher or school-driven program, but I think, you know, I'm thinking back to the caller and Spencer's comments. Where would the world be had we been having these conversations 30, 40 years ago? You know, I can only imagine that we'd be in a much better place. But back to your question, very little resistance from parents. I think, if anything, appreciative and proud. I'm proud to be part of the staff at this building, just, and part of, you know, Al Heisterkamp's program. Our data speaks for itself, and we know the positive impact it's having on Sioux City America. And, you know, like Tucker, who's at Iowa State now, you know, these kids are leaving Sioux City and they're going out into the world and they're making changes.
Mm-hmm. I want to, Jennifer Jacobson and Alan Heisterkamp, I want to have you quickly comment on this before we have to go. Congress, I mentioned, passed the Campus Sexual Violence Elimination Act, requiring domestic violence, dating violence, sexual assault, stalking to be disclosed in campus crime statistics. How are you being affected in Grinnell by this new reporting requirement, Jennifer Jacobson? And then I'd like to go to Al Heisterkamp about how this fits into that.
Sure. People who are familiar with Grinnell College might know that we've actually been in the news recently, because we do have a high percentage of our students who have come forward to seek help and support for sexual assault.
More reporting.
There's more reporting, and we want to create an environment where anyone who has experienced any kind of sexual misconduct feels comfortable and feels that coming forward to the college is a good step and that they will receive the support we need. We're hopeful that not only does active bystander training help prevent sexual assault, but it also empowers peers, if they know someone who's been sexually assaulted, to be able to engage with them and have a conversation to help connect them with the resources. We can offer so much to our students if they'll come forward.
Okay. Al Heisterkamp, as we conclude this program, about a minute or so to have you look forward to see where this MVP program is headed.
The White House report really legitimizes really the strategy in Iowa and perhaps in other states as well, but specifically in Iowa, this partnership of systems, the pre-K through 12 school district systems, the higher education community college systems, and also the Iowa Coalition Against Sexual Assault, Domestic Violence, those organizations working together collaboratively to have these conversations, to talk about victim services that are available, but also to create, as Jennifer described, that culture and climate that supports victims, those who have been victimized. But it also plays, Ben, into the notion that if victims of sexual assault are more likely to report it, I may be less inclined to actually perpetrate the crime.
Al Heisterkamp, Director of the Mentors in Violence Prevention Leadership Institute at the Center for Violence Prevention at the University of Northern Iowa. Thank you so much for joining us, Al.
Thank you.
Kent Martin, thank you, as well as Jennifer Jacobson. It's been a wonderful conversation about a very important topic. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
River to River is produced by Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, and Claire Roth. Help today in Ames from Jason Burns. Also thanks to Tony Daner in Cedar Falls. Catherine Perkins is our executive producer. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. Politics Day tomorrow. Hope you'll tune in. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.